Welcome to You Don't Even Like This Band, a podcast about bands you probably don't even like.
We hope you don't know this one.
With your hosts, Adam Todd Brown, Andy Sell, and Travis Clark.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the second Fleetwood Mac season of the You Don't Even Like This Band podcast. I am Adam Todd Brown.
I am Travis, the Tuscan Raider Clark.
And Andy?
Andy has been put in time prison. Yeah, he's not here.
Yeah, Andy unfortunately is not available to record because he is in California.
Which is also where we are, but we're not in the same timeline. He's in an alternate universe right now.
Yeah. And he's here for work. This isn't work. Me and Travis are just having fun.
Man, working hard or hardly working. You know what I'm saying?
You can never tell. Who can tell? Andy will be back next week. I know that because we already recorded next week's episode a couple weeks ago because I forgot we needed to talk about this before we moved on from Tusk.
A lot of people don't know that Stevie Nicks, for a short time was running a South American dictatorship.
Yeah. Or, you know, was at least the subject of one. This will be the last episode about Tusk. I think people get it. Very unconventional album, took a long time to record. Weird follow-up to Rumors. We've talked about it. We were going to just move on to the next album we're going to discuss. But then, yeah, I forgot about, I've been promising people this story, the story of Stevie Nicks and Hernan Rojas.
Well, a.k.a. Fernando. Let's not forget.
Correct. Yeah, we've talked about him a bunch. He's part of the production team on the Tusk album, along with Richard Dashett and Ken Calais. How do you feel about Hernan Rojas and his stories?
Here's how I felt about him before I knew this story. You know, finally, a guy who's not Ken Calais in it, not like writing a fuck journal and just kind of like telling, hey, I worked on this cool record. And then I hear this story and I'm like, there was something in the water of the production team where they're just like have to overinflate and overwrite their version of a story, I feel.
Yeah, he writes the ultimate fuck journal in that his is about Stevie Nicks, which that's impressive.
Yeah, I can't fault him there. I mean, if this had happened to me at this age with one of the biggest rock stars of all time at the height of her fame, yeah, I guess I probably would write a book about it too.
I'm going to be honest, like mid to late 70s Stevie Nicks, she could still be cleaning hotel rooms and I'd have the exact same reaction.
True.
Hernan Rojas had. The way this story begins, they're working on Tusk, they're nearing the end of the sessions. They're working on the song Angel. And while they're working on it, Richard Dashett approaches young Hernan Rojas and is like, look, Stevie Nicks is trying to bone. And she has told everyone that it's going to happen tonight with you. So just a heads up.
I'm not super familiar with Hernan physically. Like, was he a dashing young man? Was there something kind of striking about him, or was it just this is the only person I have not yet had sex with in this group?
Good question. I'm sure we see him in the documentary.
Maybe so, but it's not sticking out to me though, you know?
Yeah. If so, I don't really remember him. And it seems like there are, Hernan Rojas discography.
He worked on a bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the record industry isn't what it once was. So he may have had to make a pivot, you know?
Yeah. Who knows? I'm sure he was a bit of a looker. Why not? He was young. He had money. Like, he had already done a lot of cool stuff in his career up to that point. There's a reason he was working with Fleetwood Mac. So sure.
My guess is, look, the closest thing I can say I've been to being in Fleetwood Mac is that I went to school for acting. You know, very similar.
Sure. That is very, very similar.
Very, very similar. And there comes a point where you're like, who have I not slept with? Why don't I sleep with that person?
Right.
That just is what happens. That's theater for you. So I'm just guessing maybe it was just Hernan's time.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And so sure enough, near the end of the session, they're working on Angel. Everyone else had mostly gone home by this point. Stevie Nicks tells Hernan that she wants to listen to Angel one more time.
Classic pickup line.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, can you stay and do some more work, please?
Mm-hmm.
Vintage pickup line. Mm-hmm.
We just, we need a little, after hours sesh.
Yeah. What? No, I said sesh.
Yeah. Sesh. Yeah.
You
get it.
And so they eventually end up making out right there in the studio.
Hell yeah.
But they decide that boning right there on top of the expensive mixing console probably wasn't the move. I'm surprised there wasn't just a bed somewhere in this studio.
And, you know, those mixing consoles are big and sturdy. I mean, and if you really want, you know, some unique sound quality, fucking on a Neve, you know, you just got to do it.
But also the bit, like, as much, I guess they were doing a bunch of coke. So no one did ever need a nap.
Yeah.
They just long hours, but yeah, you're all hopped up on coke. It doesn't matter. No one's trying to nap. No one's dick works because they're doing all that coke. Yeah. I guess you don't need a bed.
You just got a slow motion running Mick Fleetwood coming in and handing out everybody's rations.
So instead of doing it right there on the mixing console, they decide to go back to Stevie Nicks' house. She offers to make Hernan a Mexican omelet. She says it's her specialty. You think it was a good omelet?
I don't know. What is a Mexican omelet? Is that like...
I don't know. I guess what I'm picturing is a Denver omelet.
I'm picturing chilaquiles is what I'm picturing. So, I mean, I don't know what she's making.
Oh, Mexican omelet. Well, yeah, I mean, it's got all the stuff you'd expect. I'm going to be honest. I would eat a fucking Mexican omelet. Sure.
Is it like cheese and beans?
Yeah,
and,
sour cream, avocado, pico de gallo, bell peppers, stuff like
that. Oh, yeah. If those were, I'd mess around with that.
Yeah, I actually kind of want to make a Mexican omelet now that I'm looking at recipes and things.
To be a specialty, though, to be like, this is what I do for my lovers.
Yeah, where'd she learn that? Where did Stevie Nicks learn the ways of the Mexican omelet?
I mean, that would be one funny kind of thing if you're over at Stevie Nicks' house and she just offers you a Mexican omelet. You're like, oh, I know where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
I know what happens next.
So speaking of what happens next, I don't know if I trust that everything happened exactly as Hernan claims. If so, like Fleetwood Mac spoke to people as if there was a script in front of them.
And not a very well-written one, like a very clunky one. Yeah.
Case in point, here is a quote from Hernan's, and this is from the Ken Calais Tusk book. That book is written, I'd say, about two-thirds by Ken Calais and one-third by Hernan Rojas.
Oh, so he gets like a little guest writer? That's fun.
Yeah, as you're reading it, there are very long passages that are all in italics, and that's Hernan Rojas. And then anything that's not in italics is Ken Calais. And it's important that you write that down because they sure don't make it clear as the book goes on.
And I can tell you the Oppenheimer script is the same way. When it's from the point of view of Robert Oppenheimer, it's regular bold. And when it's from the point of view of Strauss, it's italics.
That makes sense. Yeah. The Oppenheimer script was heavily influenced by Ken Clay's book about the Tuscan.
I can tell.
Yeah, I think everyone knows that by now. So here's a quote from Hernan's part of the book. This is allegedly Stevie Nicks talking to Hernan right before they do it. Hernan, before we make love, you have to think of the implications that this moment can have on your life. I adore everything that is happening, but our next move can change your life completely. And I don't want you to be hurt. Whatever decisions you make, consider the consequences, please.
I feel like there's like a music swell happening during that moment. The camera's pushing in. It's very soap opera.
Yeah, there's a mariachi band somewhere strumming guitars sweetly. And then his reply is equally corny. Here goes, "Arg, Stephanie, I would never forgive myself if I dodged the call of passion. What has to happen? Let it happen." And then
two things stand out about that.
Sure.
This whole time, no idea Stevie Nicks' name was Stephanie. No idea.
I feel like we maybe talked about it and just moved past it, if we even talked about it at all.
When I read that, I was like, man, this guy is so out there. He's calling Stevie Stephanie. He's like, he doesn't even know what he's doing. And then I Googled it, totally her name, 100% her name. And then I like the idea that that you could just see passion calling and be like, nah, I'm not picking up. Nah, it's just passion. I'll let it go to voicemail.
And then the cringiest line, arguably in the entire book, Hernan says, we opened the gates of lovemaking.
That is some like 80s power ballad, you know. Open the gates of lovemaking. You know, like it just has. Yeah.
Did Peter Cetera write that line?
He sure did. Solo Peter Cetera.
Like, yikes, dude. Oof. He says Fleetwood, he says Mick Fleetwood found out first among the band members and said, wow, Fernandez, what have you gotten yourself into? Stevie is a wild woman. He called him Fernandez.
Called him for not even Fernando.
No, no.
He's just a different. He just can't. What have you gotten yourself into?
Oh, man.
It does feel like he is becoming more Jeffrey Rush from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. You know, like, it is my ship, you know.
And it's important to note, Hernan had a girlfriend at the time, live-in girlfriend.
Yoinks.
Yeah, he had to go home and break up with her eventually because he and Stevie Nicks just start this torrid affair. It progresses to the point that he moves into her house, which that's a step.
It is. I mean, I get it from the point of view of like, if Stevie Nicks is like, I want you as my lover, you gotta check that out. You know, it reminds me of the story of like Steve McQueen was sleeping with somebody's wife and it was like, it's Steve McQueen. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know, you're like, well,
and they're in LA. They probably live in different parts of LA. So that's going to be a logistical nightmare. You got to move into Stevie Nicks' house.
You work from home.
Yeah, exactly. So they were both really worried about how Lindsay was going to react. But when he found out, he was just bummed that he was like the last person in the band to know and that they didn't trust him enough to just tell him. And yeah, I can't imagine why they wouldn't trust Lindsay Buckingham to be chill about things.
And finding out that Stevie was sleeping with Hernan is what yesterday's news is all about. That's the backstory to that song.
So they eventually finish recording Tusk and everyone decides they need a break. And Hernan has the bright idea to, hey, how about I invite Stevie Nicks to travel back home with me to where? Echo Park? No.
Yeah.
No. Chile.
The country?
The country. And this is 1970s Chile. So
not the calmest time for that country.
No, things were pretty tense politically there. They were under the rule of a military dictatorship, a military junta, if you will. And Hernan brings up a great point that this was pre the assassination of John Lennon. So everyone was just like, oh, you're traveling to one of the more dangerous parts of our hemisphere as a world famous pop star with no security. Have fun, Stevie. We'll see you when you get back.
Look, things were one way. Then John Lennon got shot. Everything changed. Everything
that is different. True.
Yeah.
That really is true. And so, like, it's not like they could have stopped her, but someone probably would have been like, how about you take 15 to 20 people with you?
Yeah. What is this, 79 or 78?
79.
Okay. Yeah. So literally you wait one more year, but it'd have been like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Let's not do that.
Yeah. This would not have happened. I mean, it was December 1980 when John Lennon.
That's true. Up, yeah.
Right. So still into 80, but 81, no way.
81's a hard no. 80's a maybe.
Yeah.
79's a green light.
Yeah, exactly. They end up traveling to Chile together on the first ever 747 nonstop flight from LA to Santiago. Cool.
Really?
What a fun piece of trivia.
Oh, the first 747 from LA to there, not the first nonstop 747 flight ever.
No. Just the first one.
Yeah.
Ever to travel from LA to Santiago nonstop.
Well, yeah, that's how did they know that?
I have no clue. It must have been brought up on the flight. Maybe.
Or when they're writing the book, they're like, you know, if I'm looking back, this seems like this is the first one. We should put that in. Put that in the book. People are going to love that fact.
Google it. Are we right? I think it's the first one.
I think it's okay.
If I know 747 history the way I think I do.
People reading the Tusk book, like, I'm just here for the 747 facts, man.
If you connect the numbers, man, they make sense. Everything totally makes sense.
7 + 7 = 14. Add another 4, 18. Because this is totally legal now, man.
And so they arrive in Chile. It's still heavily under military control. Interesting bit of trivia. Stevie Nicks got along really well with Hernan's mother, Maria Teresa. One of the things they bonded over was that Maria had a lot of like weird pharmaceuticals just on stock at her home, including one of them called Belladenol that Stevie Nicks used to treat her stomach cramps. The main ingredient in Belladenol is belladonna alkaloid, which is derived from the belladonna plant. Stevie nicknamed Maria Teresa Belladonna over all that and would go on to name her first solo album, Belladonna, also.
Is this like an opiate? Or is it just like Pepto-Bismol?
That I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it's...
I'm just trying to understand, like, is Maria, like, does she have stuff from the pharmacy at her house? Or is she, like, concocting herbal remedies? Or is she just a drug runner?
Belladonna looks like it's just a prescription.
Okay.
Belladonna phenobarbital.
Uh-oh. That can't be good.
Yeah. It helps to reduce the symptoms of stomach and intestinal cramping. So, yeah, Stevie Nicks' first solo album is named after Big Pharma.
It's named after
nice
her summer lover's mother who had tummy medicine.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, the song Belladonna is about Stevie Nicks taking a very satisfying shit.
You know, when that does happen, it is a moment, and you should try and capture that, especially with song.
Now I have to check and make sure she actually has a song called Belladonna.
She has an album, I would assume. Titular.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Or
first song on the album is called Belladonna.
I believe.
So that joke still works. Keep it in. Keep it in.
I believe that would be the titular title of that album.
God damn it. We do good work here.
Sure do.
People listening are so fucking lucky. So it was all fun and games down there in Chile for a little bit until it wasn't anymore. Because they were, one of the things that Stevie and Hernan would do in Chile was go out and party.
Sure. Yeah.
They're young. They like to party. Why not go party? But there was a curfew in place.
Now it's like, you got to get home early. You got to clean your room. You can't go out anymore. They weren't having fun anymore. School started up again. And so that's why the trip stopped being fun, right?
Not quite.
Oh, damn it.
You're close.
Okay.
What happened is one night they went out partying and lost track of time and had to drive back home after curfew. And again, this is military controlled Chile. One of the things the military did was shoot out streetlights. So they were harder to spot when they were like doing checkpoints and things.
Oh, okay.
So Hernan says he drove with the interior lights on in the car, drove very slowly so they didn't, you know, get shot at. And nevertheless, they end up getting pulled over by this armed patrol. And this is the quote. It's kind of long. Sorry. Here goes. The patrol pointed their M16s and Uzis at us and signaled us to stop. We stopped. They approached Stevie's window, waving very fast. And as she rolled it down, they put a machine gun straight to her head. Everything stopped. We both freaked out, but somehow we managed to stay cool. I told Stevie not to worry, that I would give the proper explanations as to why we were out during curfew. Thankfully, the officer in charge was level-headed and listened to my story that I was driving a famous American artist to her hotel and that we had no clear understanding of the curfew hours. End quote. That is such a crazy fucking detail to me. Imagine if that is how Fleetwood Mac as a band ended. Stevie Nicks getting shot by a military junta in Chile.
be like, don't worry, honey. I've done this before. We just drive with the lights on the inside. It won't be a problem. And they're just like, oh, cool. There's someone to shoot. We can see them clearly. Let's pull them over and shoot them.
And just like, if that had actually happened, if Stevie Nicks had died in that moment, that would be such a conspiracy theory to this day.
Yes, I would support it because he makes a point to say that it's M16s. M16 is an American weapon, which means that the Americans sponsored. It's a CIA killing of Stevie Nicks.
Travis,
yeah,
are you implying that the American intelligence and military intervene in the affairs of Latin American countries?
I'm saying if you put all of the pieces of the puzzle down on the floor and you start trying to piece together what you're trying to get, maybe you don't have all the pieces, but you start to get the picture. That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to do my own research after this and see if you're correct.
I think it's possible.
I guess so. I guess anything's possible.
Yeah, right?
Like I have a pretty idealized vision of the American government, but
I know we take care of things here at home so well, you wouldn't think that we would have the ability to even think about meddling in other affairs.
Right, right.
So why would, and especially, I mean, what, what's in that part of the world? Like oil, maybe? I don't know. I mean, why would we care?
Why do we need oil? Is your door squeaking when you open it?
Yeah, I've got WD-40. Are you telling me we're invading 40 different countries to get out a bunch of WD? Is that what you're telling me?
I can get oil whenever I need it. I made a fish sandwich with some last night.
Yeah, exactly. I have so much olive oil in my kitchen. What are we invading? Greece? I don't think so.
So, yeah, Stevie Nicks gets a gun pulled on her. With that, the two of them immediately change their plane tickets and get the fuck out of Chile, which is a good idea, but
absolutely, yeah.
They fly to Rio, which is in Brazil, which was also under a military dictatorship at the time.
Are they just going on a tour of bad ideas? Like, what is this?
He wanted Stevie Nicks to see some fucking crime.
But that would be like right now. No, I'm not even going to make a joke about what it would be like doing right now. It would be like going to a very troubled area right now.
Sure would. I get what you're saying, Travis.
Yeah.
And we could honestly list like 8 to 10.
Yeah.
That it would be like going to.
Sure. Yeah.
A lot of troubled areas in the world right now. So they fly to Rio and they check into their hotel. They go for a walk. They come back and the room has been burglarized and Stevie Nicks jewelry has all been stolen.
I'm just picturing, I mean, if they're in Rio in this period, I'm just picturing, what is it? City of God. You ever seen that movie? It's like,
oh, I sure have.
Yeah. That's what I'm picturing.
Yeah. It's what I picture every time, but there's also like, I think at one point Brazil had more Avon saleswomen than military people. So there's also a whole other part of Brazil that isn't City of God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's an interesting fact from history. I doubt that it's still true because I don't think Avon's doing that well. But at one point, it was at least like an anecdotal thing.
So now it's more like Erewhon and not Erewhon. What's the thing? Erbon. It's all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Probably Herbalife.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Again, you're fleeing the military rule in Chile and going to Brazil, which is like a out of the frying pan into the fryer kind of situation.
And like, what's next? It's like, hey, let's go to Argentina real quick. I want to meet, I want you to meet some of my old German friends. You'll love them.
Exactly. You want to meet Tupac?
I don't even know who that is yet. It's 1979.
And then, as if this trip cannot get any better, the big payoff. Here's a quote.
This is amazing.
After Stevie was bitten by a German shepherd at a dinner party, we concluded that the whole idea of an idyllic South American vacation was most assuredly cursed. End quote. Man, this is South America in the 70s. I could have assured you that it was cursed before you got on the first ever 747 nonstop flight from LA to Santiago.
I love the time. Like, if you were to like trim this all down. It's like, okay, we took this big plane ride over to Chile. We were hanging out. We were partying. We were out too late. Got a gun in my face. We're like, we got to get out of here. We flew over to Brazil. We're hanging out in Brazil. I get bitten by a German shepherd. I'm like, we got to get the fuck out of here. By the way, before that happened, someone stole all my jewelry. Anyway, we decide time to go home.
Exactly. And here's the thing. They flew back to Chile where a return flight to LA was waiting. And only Stevie Nicks got on that flight while Hernan stayed behind to handle some family stuff. And Hernan even says in the book, like, he's like, I knew once she got on that flight by herself, once I got back to LA, I wasn't going to be dating Stevie Nicks anymore. Or the way he put it, as her 747 took off, I sensed that some of the magic and love from our affair was maybe coming to an end. It's like, no way.
You think?
But that trip to Chile went so well.
I'm not even in this situation. And I'm like, if I'm dropping off Stevie Nicks at the airport, I'm like, have a nice flight. I'm not seeing her again under romantic situations. I am like, oh, next time I work on the album, I guess we'll be buddies. But
yeah,
it's kind of over.
And sure enough, that is when he saw her again. When he finally made it back to LA, they're working on Tusk a little more. And she pulls him aside and breaks up with him. And why? Because the minions of a military junta pointed machine guns at her head. Grow up, Missy. It's called life.
I hope it was the it's not you, it's me speech. That's what I hope. It's not you. Or I guess if we're going to do the military, bad pun coming. It's not the coup, it's me.
It's not you, it's me. Who has the head that the machine gun was pointed at and who got bit by the German shepherd. And you're just a bad travel companion, Hernan. And now she's got to go on tour.
Yeah. It's not you. It's me telling you, I don't want to date you anymore. Just get away from me.
And now a word from our sponsor, Blackwood Distilling. Blackwood Distilling was created in 2020 after co-founder Guinness McFadden won the 2019 Kentucky Derby with Country House at 65-1 odds. McFadden then parlayed his Blackwood Farms horse farm into Blackwood Distilling with the help of the Justins of Justin's House of Bourbon in Lexington and Louisville. Together, they bottled a barrel-strength Kentucky bourbon that harkened back to the heyday of Kentucky's spirit in the 1950s and 60s with a deep, creamy body, soft barrel spices, and balance that exudes strength, warmth, with that iconic hint of vanilla lurking underneath it all. Alongside the bourbon, they also created America's first triple barrel finished toasted rye whiskey at barrel strength by using toasted barrels from Kelvin Cooperage. Batch 4 of the bourbon and batch 3 of the rye, along with single barrels of each, are hitting shelves in Kentucky and Florida now, and Texas in August, with more states coming soon. Please visit blackwooddistillingco.com to see where you can find and buy Blackwood Toasted Bourbon and Toasted Rye right now. Just hit that shop button. Thanks. Let's get back to the podcast. So again, this was all right around the time the Tusk sessions were coming to an end, and the people at Warner Brothers were clamoring to, you know, hear the album.
It's been like 2 years now, right?
It's been such a long time. Like, there is a moment that I didn't put in the notes, but that's in the book. And I really do recommend Ken Kaye's books, especially if you like Fleetwood Mac. Like, you're going to get like, if you like Fleetwood Mac to that degree, you'll find all of the technical stuff about the recording of the album very interesting. But I wasn't sure it was going to translate to a podcast audience. But there is a section where they talk about making, this was like one of the first digital albums.
Really?
But it was done in a way like, you know how computers used to take up like a whole room? Mm-hmm. They went through this whole process where they're uploading, I don't remember exactly how it worked, but they would take the files to this digital place and they would be like, oh, you need to like trim 2 seconds from the end of that song. No problem. We'll have those files downloaded in about 7 days. And at one point near the end, Christine McVie just like decided that she wanted like one little thing changed. And it just took like weeks of this computer like rendering these files. That's insane.
Crazy, because I would assume at the time, if you had done it on tape, it'd been like, I want 1 second trimmed off. 1 second, hold on, and trim and tape. All right, all done.
Yeah, but nope, it was a whole process. And during all of it, the record label was just not really allowed to hear anything the band was doing, which would be frustrating as a record label, I'm sure, especially if your band is spending like 50 grand a day on cocaine while they're.
Yeah. And they're also like, we need the entire Dodger Stadium to record a band.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to need the USC marching band on multiple occasions.
Yeah. And just the whole Dodger Stadium to record that. That's going to give us the sound we want.
And a cardboard cutout of John McVie. We're not compromising on that.
When we're not paying for that, that is coming out of the Warner Brothers budget. We are not making our own.
We need that for marketing,
because it's Flat McVie. People just mail it to each other across the country and stand him up.
So the label executives were finally allowed to hear Tusk at a listening party held by the band at Studio D. Lindsey Buckingham, and we should add, Andy wants everyone to know that what we're about to tell you about Lindsey Buckingham, Andy likes it a lot.
And this is his favorite part, I think he said, of the whole thing.
Yeah. And this is pretty funny. Lindsey, the whole time, was put off that label executives wanted to hear the music. Like, he wanted them to have no input. Just, we're done. Here's your album. Fuck off forever. But they're like, no, we want to hear it before it's released. And so they arranged this listening party at the studio. Lindsey, for one, demands that when they play the album back, it's just at the most ear-splitting volume possible. Just like the loudest you can play it without possibly incurring a lawsuit. And then he sits directly across from the people listening to the album, smoking joint after joint, expressionless, and just blowing smoke in their faces the whole time.
Have you ever seen Robert De Niro's Cape Fear?
Yes, I have.
I'm picturing that. Yeah. The movie theater scene where he's just like puffing on a cigar, and that's what I'm picturing.
Yeah. And I can see Lindsey Buckingham doing that. That's a classic move. Like
classic Buckingham. Yeah. If they kicked him out of the band, they'd need two people to do that. They couldn't just do that by himself. You know, one person can't do that amount of damage.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It would have taken two people to smoke that joint if it was anyone else. So that part was fun. Also fun. The label listened to Tusk and they hated it.
I mean, what rational person would walk away from that listening party going, I loved it. That was great. That's exactly how I wanted that album to hear. That's how I wanted to experience it. And that's the level I wanted to listen to it at. And also, was that 2 hours or 2 days? I can't tell anymore. I was just held captive by Lindsey Buckingham.
They also did not know that the band intended to release Tusk as the first single. The label was like, yeah, out of everything on that album, Tusk first. Okay. Lindsey Buckingham described the look on everyone's faces as the look of realizing their Christmas bonus isn't going to happen this year.
I mean, look, it's a good album. It's a fun album, but that is not the follow-up to Rumors that I think anybody was expecting. So yeah,
no.
Who's going to be like, perfect. Yeah. I know how to market this giant album.
Yeah. It really is very reminiscent of Neil Young, and he released Harvest, which is still his biggest selling album of all time. It's the one that's got Old Man on it, Heart of Gold, all those, like the needle and the damage done, all that stuff. And then he was like, ooh, I don't like how that feels. I'm huge right now. And so his next album was Tonight's the Night, which it's my favorite Neil Young album, probably, maybe On the Beach, but Tonight's the Night is a shambles. Like it sounds like a band going through something very dark. And they were, because their lead guitarist had just died of a heroin overdose a few months earlier.
Oh.
And Neil Young followed up Harvest with Tonight's the Night. People were like, what are you doing? Why? But in retrospect, one of his better albums. And same thing with Tusk.
That's the thing about albums, right? I face it a lot with a lot of bands that I'm a big fan of, and their follow-up to maybe their big album, the album I really liked, fell short at the time for me as a listener.
Yeah.
But then time happens and you go back, you're like, oh, I haven't listened to this album in a while. And you listen to it, you're like, this is a great album. I just had, it was either slightly ahead of its time or it wasn't where I was at the time. It wasn't, it's a piece of art. It's not made to be an immediate follow-up to something. It's something that's supposed to kind of live detached from other things and you experience it differently.
Yeah, my personal example of that is the Drive-By Truckers fourth album. Nope, that's not right. Maybe it would be their sixth, but the follow-up to A Blessing and a Curse, the album's called Brighter Than Creation's Dark, and it's the first album after Jason Isbell left the band. And so just off that alone, I was like, all right, well, this isn't going to be as good as the Drive-By Truckers usually are. And the first time I listened to it, I was like, yep, I'm right. It's not as good. And then give it like a month of listening to it, and I was like, this is my favorite Drive-By Truckers album.
Yeah.
And it still is. It's one of my favorite albums, like, of all time. I love it so much. And when I first heard it, I was like, they were better with Isbell in the band.
Yeah. Same thing with Queens of the Stone Age. When they had a big lineup change after Songs for the Deaf, nobody,
I remember
myself
that.
Included, was like, this next album, man, I don't know about it. And it's different. And the band takes a whole different trajectory after it. And at the time you're like, oh, it's cool. I miss Nick. I wish Nick was still in the band. But you go back now it's been 18 years. You go back and you listen to that record. You're like, this is a fucking great record. We just were caught up in all of the bullshit of the personal dynamic. Same stuff we're talking about with Fleetwood Mac. You're caught up in all the personal drama and you let that infect how you feel about something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, go back and listen to it later.
Yep.
Great. The other interesting quirk about Tusk, one of the things that possibly contributed to why it didn't sell as well as Rumors, it was released on October 12th, 1979, at the shockingly high price of $15.98. And you hear that, and that doesn't sound that bad, but for one thing, Ken Kaleigh points out in his book, that's like $55 in today's money.
Jesus.
And I went and looked it up. No, it's not. A lot of years have passed since Ken Kaleigh wrote this. It's now $65 in today's money for just a regular ass studio album.
I mean, is it colored vinyl? Is it glow in the dark vinyl? Is it anything special edition?
Nah. It had very elaborate packaging.
It was a double album. I mean, but even that feels excessively high.
Yeah. I guess a vinyl record today being like around $30 isn't crazy.
No, but remember when Springsteen put out his big like box set in like the early to mid 80s?
Yeah.
That thing was $30. Yeah. That thing was like $30 then.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, you couldn't keep that thing on the shelves. This is double that.
Yeah. And that a lot of that had to probably do with how much they spent recording the album also. Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac albums are a lot like coffee beans. It has to do with rarity and scarcity. And that's what really drives up the price.
They are absolutely a lot like coffee beans.
Yeah. Very much. Say. Yeah.
And so that didn't help sales at all. Another thing that did not help. This is fascinating to me. Fleetwood Mac got Napstered before Napster. This is amazing. Someone stole Stevie Nicks' reference copy of the Tusk album from the studio before they released Tusk. And that person just openly sold it to a radio station called RKO. And RKO, and I think RKO like owned a lot of radio.
Yeah, they owned studios.
Yeah. And RKO was just like, yeah, we'll buy it and we're going to play it before the album comes out. And they did. And this was at a point in history when home recording of albums was huge. Like the cassette tape
was
pretty recent and people were way into it. There were all these, I remember reading that at the time, just like when digital files became a thing, the music industry put all these, you know, warnings and precautions out about what it was going to do to music. When home taping became a thing, there was this campaign about how home taping was going to ruin the music industry.
Oh yeah, that too. Yes. Anything that could be taped was ruining whatever industry the media you were taping was.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think I read this in a book about Nirvana, but someone around that time also started putting out bumper stickers and things that said home fucking is ruining the porn industry, which is very funny.
It's true.
But that probably didn't help with sales of Tusk.
No.
And also just letting people hear it in advance. That gives people, even if they didn't record it, I guarantee a lot of people heard it and were like, this isn't what I'm looking for from Fleetwood Mac.
No. Or you go, oh, I liked that one song. That song was weird. Why was that the next song? $65. Not right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, they got Napstered. That's crazy.
But they didn't do the Metallica thing. Did they rage against the home taping industry?
I don't think they did.
And also too, I feel like Warner Brothers could just sue the pants off of RKO. Like, that's copyrighted material. That's not a new idea.
Yeah. I get the sense that maybe Warner Brothers did this on purpose.
Maybe that, like, RKO was at the time a subsidiary of old Warner.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels, cause that's my question too. Like, why wouldn't they just sue the shit out of them?
Are you saying that big studios have ways of going behind artists' back to find a way to recoup or maybe even subjugate the success of something?
I would never suggest such a thing.
Okay.
Music, like, record companies are mostly on the up and up if you look throughout history.
Yeah. I mean, historically, people say the record industry is one of that, and like car salesmen are the most trustworthy group of people that you could possibly interact with.
Big pharma.
Lawyers.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like
so that. So great. Yeah.
So that concludes the Tusk portion of this season. Next episode, we're transitioning into Tango in the Night. Now, Fleetwood Mac heads out there are going to be like, what about Mirage?
Excuse me. I believe there was another release between these two discography entries.
And you nerds are right, but also Mirage isn't that good. It's not. It was them. They reacted to Tusk in the way a lot of bands react when their follow-up album, like, gives people pause. With Mirage, Fleetwood Mac was like, all right, fine, we'll make Rumors again. And you can't make Rumors again. It's not even close. You can tell they're trying to sound like Fleetwood Mac Rumors era again, but yeah, it's not working.
Don't be Weezer, Fleetwood Mac. Don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're moving on to Tango in the Night on the next episode. We're going to do a little listening party.
Hell yeah.
Where me, Travis, and Andy, once again,
the return of Andy.
I know he'll be back because we already recorded that episode. So yeah, give it a listen when it drops.
Should we consider making an Andy bot in case something like this happens again? Just like a little soundboard to, like, drop in Andyisms.
Well, we could do a soundboard, or the technology has progressed enough that I feel like ChatGPT could just, like, sit in for Andy.
So we have, like, an AI Andy.
Yeah. We just feed it a bunch of podcasts that he's on. And we're just like, all right, do that when me and Travis are talking.
And then for whatever reason, the AI also has a lag. We're like, it's too accurate.
Yeah, it's doing it on purpose. Just comes in with a shitty connection. It's like, what, man? I'm a machine. This is what you want me to do, right?
Look, I've listened to a lot of these recordings. This was in every recording. So this must be what you want.
Also, Hitler had some good ideas.
Look good for the boys coming back.
All right, that is our episode. Hey, Travis, thanks so much.
Thanks, it's always fun to talk about this stuff, and I always learn something. I'm now never going to look at Stevie Nicks the same again for several reasons, mostly because her name is Stephanie.
Yeah, yeah, mostly that. What do we have to plug before we get out of here? I would invite people to check out adamtoddbrown.substack.com. Here's the thing. Even if you don't want to give me money there, you should follow me because it's where I'm going to like be posting most of my updates about things I'm doing in my work life. Like I'm bad at social media, but I'm good at writing. You can also go read my new column about Aaron Rodgers and what I think might be behind his recent pivot to official misinformation correspondent of the Pat McAfee show. Spoiler, I think he might have CTE.
He's not just trying to be like sports Glenn Beck.
I mean, he's trying to be that, but also I think there might be
too much brain rattles.
Yeah. Mm. He's had four of them. Yikes. The last one at the end of the season, right before he started going on Pat McAfee.
Well. Isn't that convenient?
Travis, do you have anything to plug?
I would like to plug Adam's Substack. You should go there. Show I worked on Audible has been released finally. I did it like a year ago. I did a lot of the like editing and stuff on it, but I'm also the intro and outro voices. So if you want to listen to Bright Ideas on Audible, I'm the intro and outro to that. And also to like, maybe you'll learn how to get a better business mindset or any of the other topics we cover. There's Stone's Throw also on Audible. I'm the main narrator of that entire audiobook. And there is Marvel Move, where I play Nightcrawler. If you want to hear my voice doing other things other than this,
go listen to all that. And let's get out of here. Travis, say goodbye.
Yar, matey. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.